विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नाम्ने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
We are reading from the 11th canto today, chapter 2, verse 39.
Shrunavan Subhadrani Rathangapane जन्मानि कर्माणि च यानि लोके गीतानि नामानि तदर्थकानि गायन् लज्जो विचरेत संगं श्रीमान् सुभद्राणि रथांगपाणे जन्मानि कर्माणि च यानि लोके गीतानि नामानि तदर्थकानि गायन् लज्जो विचरेत श्रृण्वन् सुभद्राणि रथांगपाणे जन्मानि कर्माणि च यानि लोके गीतानि नामानि तदर्थकानि सुभद्राणि रथांगपाणे जन्मानि कर्माणि च यानि लोके गीतानि नामानि तदर्थकानि गायन्ति लज्जोविचरेत सिंहाः
माताजी
श्रृण्वन् सुभद्राणि रथांगपाणे जन्मानि कर्माणि च यानि लोके गीतानि नामानि तदर्थकानि गायन्ति लज्जो विचरेत सिंहाः श्रीमान् सुभद्राणि रथांगपाणे जन्मानि कर्माणि च यानि लोके गीतानि नामानि तदर्थकानि गायन्ति लज्जो विचरेत सिंहः श्रीमान् सुभद्राणि रथांगपाणे जन्मानि कर्माणि च यानि लोके गीतानि नामानि तदर्थकानि गायन्ति लज्जो विचरेत सिंहः
Word meanings. Shrunavan, hearing, Subhadrani, all auspicious, Rathangapane, of the Supreme Lord, who holds a chariot wheel in his hand, in his pastime of fighting with grandfather Bhishma. Janmani, the appearances, Karmani, activities, Cha and Yani, which, Loke, in this world, Gitani, are chanted, Namani, names, Tadarthakani, signifying these appearances and activities, Gayan, singing, Vilajjaha, free from embarrassment, Vicharet, one should wander, Asangaha, without material association. Translation. An intelligent person who has controlled his mind and conquered fear should give up all attachment to material objects such as wife, family, and nation, and should wander freely without embarrassment, hearing and chanting the holy names of the Lord, the bearer of the chariot wheel. The holy names of Krishna are all auspicious because they describe his transcendental birth and activities, which he performs within this world for the salvation of the conditioned souls. Thus, the holy names of the Lord are sung throughout the world. Now, we have a very long purport here, about 3 pages long, so I don't want to spend all the time we have reading it, but hopefully I'll touch on the points in this purport through the PowerPoint presentation I have. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I have a presentation on today's topic. Go to the extreme. Go to slideshow and then the left button. The leftmost button. Yes. Oh, go back. The first slide. Arrow. Use the arrow to go up. Thank you. So this is a very interesting chapter, like all chapters in the Bhagavatam, but I found it especially interesting because there are so many verses here that we quote often. It is like the 14th chapter in the 10th canto, Lord Brahma's prayers. There are so many verses there that are quoted over and over again. The same thing with this one, it seems. So I thought that I would do a quick review of what went on before for those who came in late, and for those like myself who didn't come in late, but I forget all of these things very quickly. So today's presentation is going to start with King Nimi's questions. Just the background. King Nimi is the king of Videha. He's hosting guests. There are 9 sages, the Nava Yogendras. And Havi and Kavi, the 2 Yogendras, are speaking in this chapter. This conversation is being recited by Narad Muni to Vasudev in Dwaraka. And so Narad Muni is constantly moving, but by Krishna's grace, he's able to stay in Dwaraka. And while he's staying in Dwaraka, he visits Vasudev in his house, Krishna's father. And Vasudev asks him questions. And then in response, Narad Muni relates this conversation. And this conversation again is a question answer. So King Nimi is hosting these 9 sages who are the sons of Rishabhdev, of the 100 sun fame, who gives this beautiful set of instructions. I think it's a 5th canto. Which canto? I don't know. 5th canto? In the 5th canto. So, now, the question that Nimi poses, Maharaj Nimi, I paraphrase them here, I'm not providing the verses, but I'm giving you the verse numbers in case you want to go back and look at it later. So, in 11 to 30 and 31, he asks 2 questions. So, the first question is, what is the supreme good? And the second question is, how should one engage in the devotional service of the Lord? These are the 2 questions. Sounds familiar? These are the same type of questions that were asked in the first canto, in the first chapter. Akhyahi me harer dhiman avtara katha shubhaha. So the whole Bhagavatam is an answer to those 6 questions posed in the first chapter, the first canto. And these questions are the same questions that were posted there, and they are being answered again here. And so it's continuously being refreshed for us. what the purpose of the Bhagavatam is. So, what is the supreme good and how should one engage in the devotional service of the Lord? So let's go to the next one. And now King Nimi has answered these questions already by the 39 verse, and he'll continue to elaborate on these answers. So let's look at the answers so far that we have received. Before answering, he defines the problem that human beings have in this world. And this is in 11 to 33 and in 11 to 37 both. 37 is our famous verse that we quote so many times, and I've heard it so many times in this room and other temples also. Vayam dvitiya abhinivesata syat. And 33 is the verse, Manne kutaschit bhayam achyutasya. Sri Kavi said, I consider that one whose intelligence is constantly disturbed by his false identification with the temporary material world can achieve real freedom from fear only by worshipping the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So the problem is false identification with the material world. Ahankar. We think we are the senses, including the mind. And that leads to fear. And this fear, also translated as anxiety, drives us like a taskmaster. Somebody, the mind is like a goad that drives the elephant. So this false identification leads to fear. So what's the solution? So the answer then is in the same verses, Bhagavad Dharma, or devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is 11 to 33. This is the supreme good. That's the answer. Okay, we know this. We've heard this many times. But there are also new aspects to this, at least from my point of view, that I want to bring out today. So the next one, the supreme good. What is the supreme good? 11:34 to 34 also answers this. So there's a continuation. Oh, sorry. This is why is it the supreme good? Why is devotional service the supreme good? And the reason for that is in verse 34. Because it's spoken by the Lord himself. Supreme good. We can ask many different people what is good for me. We'll get many different answers. But the Supreme Lord, when he tells us what is good for us, we should pay attention and listen up. Right? So this is why it is the supreme good, because it's spoken by Krishna himself. This idea also is in the seventh canto. Prahlad Maharaj says, Ayam Bhagavata Audidaha, Yad Ishvare Bhagavati Yata Yair Anjasarati. Tatra Upaya Sahastranam Ayam Bhagavata Audidaha. There are thousands and thousands of possible solutions to our problems. Getting a better job, etc. But also spiritual solutions, so-called spiritual solutions. But Ayam Bhagavata Audidaha. This path is spoken by Krishna, by Bhagavan himself. Prahlad Maharaj is saying. And why is, so that's why it's the supreme good. We should trust Krishna that this is the way to go. Yad Ishvare Bhagavati Yatha Yair Anjasarati. We get love, rati, bhava or prema for Krishna very quickly by this method. So, and also a side note here, even ignorant people can be easily successful. So it is not very heavy weightlifting exercise, mental exercise anyway. It is simple. Of course, we all know here that it is not simple because we are victims, prisoners of our mind. We are tortured by our mind. And the mind goads us to do all kinds of undesirable things that take us away from bhakti. So it's a perpetual, constant struggle with ourselves. Not ourselves per se, but the enemy within the mind. That makes it difficult. However, the claim is of devotional service that if one were engaged in the service of Krishna by the spiritual master faithfully, then it's not so difficult. Then it's not so difficult. It doesn't have to be painful. So I'll bring this theme out later. So go on. Then the second question was, how should one engage in devotional service? And the answer is unflinchingly in the unalloyed, so this is verse 37, unflinchingly in the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, whom he should accept as his worshipable deity and as his very life and soul. This is the Bhayam Dvitiya Abhinivesata Syat. The second part is, I think, more important than the first part. Oh, I'm afraid. What's the solution? The second part is the solution. The solution is Guru Devatatma, that was last words. Treating the Guru as the worshipable deity and as the very life and soul. Now, this aspect of is not novel, but for my mind it was refreshingly new. Because when we look at the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna defines the same problem. False identity, dhyayato vishayan punsa sangasteshu pajayate, focusing on the material world, then you get attachment, from attachment comes lust, da da da, there's degradation, then he falls down. There is, in third chapter, Krishna defines the problem again, but this time he says, tasmatvam indriyanya daunyam me bharatarshapa. In the beginning, control your senses. When your mind is trying to focus on the sense organs, control it in the beginning. Papmanam prajahi enam jnana vijnana nashanam. This is a very sinful enemy and it's going to destroy your knowledge and intelligence. So, yes, but we try, but we can't on our own strength. So, we need the Guru. This is what I took away from this passage. And I'll provide some more references for this. To be able to conquer the senses and the mind, we need the Guru. Indispensable. So, let's go on. Vishwanath Chakravarti cites this in the commentary on this verse. And this is from the 7th canto, 15th chapter, 25th verse. This is Prabhupada writing. Rajastamasya sattvena sattvam cha upashamena cha etat sarvam gurau bhaktya purushohi anjasajaye. One must conquer the modes of passion and ignorance by developing the mode of goodness. And then one must become detached from the mode of goodness by promoting oneself to the platform of Shuddha Sattva. All this can be automatically done. All this, I emphasize, all this can be automatically done. If one engages in the service of the spiritual master with faith and devotion, in this way one can conquer the influence of the modes of nature. That's a pretty interesting thing. Conquering the modes of nature. Serve the spiritual master, you conquer the modes of nature. Let's go on. Prabhupada writes in his purport, this might be a little small for you to read, I'll try to read up also. Just by treating the root cause of an ailment, one can conquer all bodily pain and suffering. The root cause is the mind and how it's buffeted by the modes of material nature. Similarly, if one is devoted and faithful, so the root cause is the problem. If you solve the root problem, everything is solved. Prabhupada is saying, similarly, if you go to the root, that's the spiritual master. Similarly, if one is devoted and faithful to the spiritual master, he can conquer the influence of sattva-guna, raja-guna and tamaguna very easily. Yogis and jnanis practice in many ways to conquer the senses, but the bhakta immediately attains the mercy of the spiritual master. Attains the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the mercy of the spiritual master. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado. If the spiritual master is favorably inclined, one naturally receives the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, one immediately becomes transcendental, conquering all the influences of sattva, raja and tamoguna within this material world. If one is a pure devotee acting in the directions of the Guru, one easily gets the mercy of the Supreme Lord and thus becomes immediately situated on the transcendental platform. Let's go to the next slide. Prabhupada also translates the next one like this. The spiritual master should be considered to be directly the Supreme Lord. Yasya sakshat bhagavati. You know, when I was starting out in ISKCON, Prabhupada, I remember watching some interviews following Srila Prabhupada in these different videos and reading his letters, and I would think, that's a tall claim. Prabhupada is saying, yasya prasadat bhagavat prasada, sakshat hari, was tough for me to digest. Because the way I've grown up, I see defects in human beings more than the good. I can analyze people quickly, and my mind's looking for their weaknesses. So it's hard for me to see how a human being can be sakshat hari. But here's the verse. The spiritual master should be considered to be directly the Supreme Lord because he gives transcendental knowledge for enlightenment. Consequently, for one who maintains the material conception that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, everything is frustrated. His enlightenment and his Vedic studies and knowledge are like the bathing of an elephant. That means Prabhupada writes a beautiful purport. I recommend highly that should be read about the elephant bathing, then becoming dirty again, so it's no use. It's just temporary, it doesn't have a sustained influence. And what I found in my devotional career, short as it is that I tend to undergo micro fall downs, as I call them. Micro fall downs, not major fall downs. I can't undergo major fall downs because I'm not a sannyasi, so I don't have that privilege. But micro fall downs, yes. So these micro fall downs, why do they occur? And my analysis is that over time, the mind tends to become critical of Prabhupada also, of other acharyas, of the devotees. You know, we disagree, we can't process some things Prabhupada says. We see obvious mistakes sometimes, at least I do. Obvious to me. So what happens is that slowly there is a drift. This is in physics, we see this also. There is a drift of a molecule that's under a small, very tiny force. The molecule is diffusing in water, but if you apply an electric field, for example, it's a very small force compared to all the forces acting on it, but it continues to drift and ultimately it settles. This is how air molecules settle on the earth. I don't know why I'm talking about this. But so it's the same way here. The offense is minor, it's very tiny, small, but it slowly causes us to deviate, slowly. It amplifies, it accumulates. It's very tiny, but it accumulates, then it accumulates, 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 and then suddenly we find ourselves way, way, way off this. And then we ask, how did I get here? What happened here? So this happens to me all the time. So then I drift and then I bring myself back and then I drift and I bring myself back. And how do I bring myself back? By the association of devotees. If I put myself in the association of devotees and I'm willing to accept the bitter pill of criticism every now and then I'm able to come back. So, let's go on. Prabhupada says, the spiritual master, this is from the purport, is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore one who is very serious about spiritual advancement must regard the spiritual master in this way. Even a slight deviation from this understanding can create disaster. A slight deviation, I was talking about a small force, right? Can create disaster in the disciples of Vedic studies and austerities. I love how he writes that. Vedic studies and austerities. That's what we're doing, folks. We're students of the Vedas. Let's go. Next one. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I forget which one, on commentary on the 39th verse, says it even more clearly. One should control the mind which accepts or rejects actions. This was talked about in Mahatma Prabhu's lecture yesterday. Control of the mind, however, will not take place except by devotion to the lotus feet of Guru, comma, and by no other method. Can't be said more clearly. We want to control our mind is out of control, and we are practicing devotees, we should assume that we are not fully in the shelter of the spiritual master, under the shelter of the spiritual master. And if our mind is not deviating, and if we are well regulated, then we shouldn't get proud of it, because that is also by the mercy of the spiritual master. And pride will lead to leaving the shelter of the spiritual master, and then the mind goes out of control. So this will continue happening till the point that we realize this fact. If our mind is under control, if we have good qualities, if we are able to rise and advance on the path of devotional service, and that's tangible in most cases, we can feel it, then it's by the mercy of the spiritual master. Okay, so let's go on. This is more supporting evidence, but I'll skip this in the interest of time. Let's go to the next one. Sridhar Swami, here's another example. Great acharyas are making this point. Yada parananda guru bhavat pade padam manome bhagavad labhet tada nirasta akhila sadhana shramaha shrayaya saukhyam bhavatah kripatah. O transcendentally blissful Guru, when my mind finally achieves a place at your lotus feet, all the tiresome labor, sounds familiar, tiresome labor, of my spiritual practices will be finished. And by your mercy, I will experience the greatest happiness. Let's go on. This is the famous verse. I will skip this because we all know, yasya deve parabhaktir, yatha deve tatha gurau. Next. The second question was, we are continuing, this chapter is continuing to churn this question of how should one engage in devotion service. Really quite amazing. The next verse, evam vratah priyanama kirtya, that's a famous verse. And that's the fruit. The verse after this one is the fruit of vaidhi sadhana, vaidhi bhakti, which is prema. Tomorrow it will be discussed. So how should one engage in devotional service? This is a famous verse outside of ISKCON, by the way. I'll tell you the background on this one. 11.236. In accordance with the particular nature one has acquired in conditioned life, whatever one does with body, words, mind, senses, intelligence, or purified consciousness, one should offer to the supreme thinking, this is for the pleasure of Lord Narayana. I knew this verse growing up, as a child. Kayena vacha manasa indriyairva buddhya atmanava anusruta svabhava karoti yad yad sabalam sakalam parasmay narayana iti samarpayam. The reason I know this is because we would have Ganesh puja at home, and also in Bombay it's a big thing, and there is aarti of Ganesh, and you know there is a standard aarti, we sing Lord Ganesh's praises. And then we end with this one. So, for many years, it never occurred to me to ask why I am singing the praises of Narayan when I am worshipping Ganesh. You ask anybody in Bombay, anybody who is a Ganesh worshipper, Marathi people, they know this verse, but, you know, they sing it. Kayena vacha manasa indriyairva, that's how it goes. Everybody knows. Nobody knows the meaning. Nobody stops to think, well, what does it mean? In fact, we sing it incorrectly because I saw this verse and it was like an enlightenment for me. Oh, this verse comes from the Bhagavata. It's supposed to worship Narayan. And the verse says, this is for the pleasure of Lord Narayan. But worshipping Ganesh is for the pleasure of Narayan. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, so let's go on. Let's continue, skip this in the interest of time. And then today's verse, 11-39, that's the culmination. This is not the culmination, but it's continuing along this logical progression. And it says, an intelligent person who has controlled the mind and conquered fear should give up all attachment to material objects such as wife, family and nation, wander freely without embarrassment, hearing and chanting the holy names of the Lord, the bearer of the chariot wheel. The holy names of Krishna are all auspicious because they describe his transcendental birth and activities which he performs within this world for the salvation of the conditioned souls. Thus the holy names of the Lord are sung throughout the world. This is referring to sadhana bhakti. The Guru, it's been explained that one should take shelter of the Guru. What does the Guru give us? He makes us qualified, or she makes us qualified for sadhana bhakti. Once that's done, what happens? Prema develops, which is the next verse. Evam vrata, so dancing like a madman. Krishna gives pure love of himself to us as fruit for our sadhana bhakti. This verse is interesting. It's got a number of points. I don't know if you have the time to talk about them, but give up attachment to material objects such as wife, family and nation. That would be a nice controversial topic to discuss. Then, bearer of the chariot wheel. So, this is a very beautiful pastime. If you want to refresh your memory, go back to the first canto, I think it's chapter 9. And Bhishma Dev is discussing, is praising Krishna. He's on the bed of arrows. And that's where the acharyas go into great depth about this relation, you know, Bhishma Dev's relationship with Krishna and what he wants him to see as. The chapter concludes by saying, Bhishma wants Krishna as his charioteer in the next life. Just like Arjuna had Krishna as his charioteer, Bhishma wants Krishna as his charioteer. So he's relishing this sight where Krishna lifts up this chariot wheel to kill Bhishma. He breaks his vow that he would not fight in the battle. to protect Bhishma's vow, his devotee's vow. It's quite beautiful and amazing. It's so rich. You have a battle going on. People are trying to kill each other. And the act of killing or the act of fighting is actually an expression of pure love for each other. It's just beyond comprehension. So that reminded me of this. This reminded me of that pastime. And then, so I think I'll stop there. It's 9:40. If you want a discussion, comments or questions.
That's a very nice point on controlling the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that when Arjuna put that question, Chanchalahi Mana Krishna Pamati Valavatiram Tashani Gram Manne Vairupi Sudushkaram. And Prabhupada very heavily quote that verse. You know, a couple of times I was listening, Prabhupada says, so it is very difficult. But then the answer Krishna gave next verse, Asamsaya Samagramam. That means he agrees. He agrees what Arjuna is feeling or what we are feeling in our life, going heart struggle. Krishna agrees. He understands in a sense. I don't know how, because he's not under Maya ever.
It is his Maya, so he knows how it works.
Yeah, but in order to experience, you have to be under. I mean, this is my human...
Okay, that's fine.
But he agrees. Asamsaya Samagramam. But then he says, Abhasana tu kunte vairagyana cha grihyate. So I was thinking that this is very appropriate, that when somebody take initiation from Guru, this is two things manifest, what Krishna says. Indirectly it's the same thing, connecting. The Guru, accepting Guru means sadhan bhakti, abhas. And then automatically sadhan bhakti, vairagya is developing. So it's very perfectly appropriate.
Yeah, it's just, it never occurred to me, I guess, to connect the Guru directly to this problem, like this has done. This chapter has very clearly stated it, just brought it out. Before Three Vipram Prabhu, there was a hand up here. Ragatmika Mataji, then I'll come back. There was a hand up here also. Okay. So let's go to the lady's side.
What's up?
Hare Krishna.
Krishna.
I was reading in the 8th canto, Bali Maharaj conquers the heavenly planets, and something Prabhupada said in the purport really stood out to me. I jotted it down. He says, by the pleasure of the spiritual master, one can get extraordinary power, especially in spiritual advancement, by pleasing the spiritual master. The blessing of the spiritual master is more powerful than one's personal endeavor for such advancement.
Thank you.
What was that group of words where you even repeated it as we read it up there? By one's labor, what was that? Anyway, the point is that that attachment to the instructions and service of the spiritual master is vital. And we should not think that we can make advancement except by that.
Yeah, my takeaway from this chapter was that, you know, we talk about controlling the mind and there's a lot of discussion back and forth. Yeah. Like Krishna says, regulate the sense at the beginning, don't contemplate the sense object, etc. But the mind is a mystical beast and you need some mystical power also to control it. You know, the spiritual master has that power. Is there a hand up here? Madhumati Mataji? And then we'll go to you, Prabhu. Sorry.
So you mentioned that what I got from your class was that we have these little fall downs regularly. But I think we're all in the same. At least I can say I'm in the same boat. So I'm assuming that these little fall downs that we have on a regular basis is offenses to the Vaishnavas. And would you say that's what you're talking about?
So there are three categories, sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. The sufferings, fall downs equal to suffering for us. In a sadhaka stage is different from that, in a bhava stage different from that, in a prema stage. For the bhava stage, Krishna personally orchestrates these fall downs, like Bharat Maharaj. Krishna personally arranges these situations to bring that devotee up to prema. In the prema stage, you know, there is no fall down. There is apparent fall downs, like Akrura's fall down in the whole sordid episode of Satrajit. But they are not suffering. So there is no suffering in prema. Now when it comes to sadhaka, the sadhaka stage, the fall downs, Vishwanath Chakravarti is categorical. Whatever suffering comes during sadhana is because of offenses. It's because of offenses. Vishwanath Chakravarti argues that, and other acharyas have other views on this. Prabhupada says it both ways. Sometimes he says karma, and sometimes he says no, my devotees are under the protection of Krishna. So in the sadhaka stage, whatever comes, is it because of karma or whatever suffering, or is it because of something else? Vishwanath Chakravarti argues that it's not because of karma. Even in the sadhana stage, Krishna takes charge of us. But whatever suffering comes to us is because of offenses. So the law of karma stops for sadhana sadhakas, for practicing devotees, and the law of offenses begins. That's my understanding. Actually, I gave a whole class on this and I presented all kinds of references for this, but if you email me, I'll send you the PowerPoint. It discusses this in great detail. In 33, in this purport, in this chapter. Hmm. Yeah. Right. So there are 10 offenses, right? There are 10 offenses to the holy name. The first offense is offenses to devotees, but there are other offenses. Guru Ravadnya, not obeying the spiritual master, Shruti Shastra Nindanam, criticizing the scriptures, Shruti and Shastra, or disregarding them, etc. I mean, there are 10 offenses. So, those offenses, the law of offense states that when you commit an offense, then you suffer. And if you don't commit, conversely, if you don't commit an offense, you will not suffer. Because in sadhana bhakti itself, kleshagni, that's the first character, first stage, first thing that happens. Kleshagni shubhada. I don't have time to discuss that now, but Give it to me.
Haribol. Nice class, good PowerPoints.
Thank you.
I was just thinking though that our standard procedure is usually we read a little bit of the purport. Mm-hmm. If not all, you know, I know it's time consuming, 3-4 pages, but a little bit, you know, like maybe two paragraph or something, just as a basis, you know. But especially for all Bhagavatam speakers, I mean, it's important because later on another speaker might come and he says, well, I heard one person never read the purport, you know, and so we have to try to absorb this.
Point is well taken, but in my defense, I read the purport in detail and then the presentation touched on various points. You can go back and check. But yes, we shouldn't completely disregard it, but at the same time, I feel like If I sit here and read it, then I don't do justice to the lecture. I actually asked this question to Ramanya Prabhu, Ramiya Prabhu last time, because he read the whole thing and it basically was 8:35 by the time he started to lecture. That's what would happen today. So I guess I made the decision.
But at least one part.
Yeah, but I don't see the point, because then I'm not doing justice to the commentary. If I just read, you know, which one should I read and how much should I read it? It's all up in the air. So, yeah, sorry to disappoint you there. Anything else? Pushkar Prabhu.
Not a big deal, but so the 10 offenses I just read recently, Harinam Chintamani, the last offense, Yach Chopadesh, Nishima, Nama. What is it? Shraddhadana. No, that one. But so Bhaktivinoda's comment was that a guru who gives instruction to a non-faithful person will fall down. But theoretically, the guru is on the Bhava platform. It seems like he'll be subject to that offense.
Okay, so I'm trying to orient my thoughts here. So what's, how is that connected to the discussion today?
Well, because you said someone on the Bhava platform, he's not really making offense if he's suffering. That was the answer.
I see. So my point was that on the Bhava platform,
so he's saying that
fall
if
down at first because of Krishna's arrangement, but you're saying that, well, it's not necessarily Krishna's arrangement. The person could fall down by their own mistakes that they commit during by instructing somebody who is by committing one of the 10 offenses.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the key question is, you say theoretically the spiritual master is on the Bhava platform, but there are different types of spiritual masters. There is the Madhyam Adhikari and then there is the Uttam Adhikari. So the question is, does this apply to the spiritual master on a Bhava platform? When what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is writing? And do
say,
we have an
yeah, example? Yeah, it definitely does, he said.
It does? When he's in a Bhava platform?
We didn't say that.
So that's the key.
Right.
So do we have an example of a spiritual master on the Bhava platform that fell down by giving an instruction to a non-devotee? That's what we need, and then I can respond.
Well, I'm giving you your homework now.
Yeah, I guess. Raghavnika Mataji might have a response to that also.
Have a response to that question. Did you, Rangavati? Oh, I have another question.
Yes, ma'am.
Did Bhishma Dev get the position of charioteer driver in his next life?
I don't know the answer to that. Maybe somebody else can answer this. The question was, did Bhishma Dev get Krishna as his charioteer in a future life? That was the question. Do we know? So Pranagovinda Prabhu is saying that it may not necessarily be that he wanted him as a charioteer, it could be that he wanted him as Adi Narayan, as a servitor, in Dasya Bhava, basically. And that's what Prabhupada has said. So there is some difference of opinion here. Mataji?
Yes. Thank you. That was a brilliant class. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. You always appreciate my classes. So.
Well, you deserve it. Yeah, this is a little bit of a controversial area, I suppose, but it is a curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very tall order in terms of the spiritual master, the need for us to be connected in that way that is Krishna, basically, or God, and then what we receive from that.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is this about an actual spiritual master, or can we take it as a spiritual master, the spiritual master? Because we know that in our society, we've had spiritual masters who have, let a lot of people down, who had this going in and having this mentality. So we see that some people pick themselves up and then take reinitiation and maybe even reinitiation again. So that's why the question is, it the principle of a spiritual master, or is it the individual, and does it always have to be that case?
Now, this is a question that will need some thought. I haven't really processed my thoughts here to answer this. So this is a very serious question. It shouldn't be treated lightly. So whatever I'll say, I guess, should be taken with a pinch of salt. Does the spiritual master referred here refer to a principle, or does it refer to an individual? Individuals are fallible. Human beings are fallible. They, for example, somebody on the Bhava platform can fall. So, for the time the person was on the Bhava platform, his or her instructions were valid. And they did purify the disciple. When the person fell down, does that mean the instructions were not valid? Does that mean that person was not a bona fide conduit for Prabhupada and other acharyas, previous acharyas? No. So, you know, it's like a electric cable. The cable was connected because the switch was on, but then the switch went bad. But before the switch went bad, the current was flowing fine. So, yes, Guru is a principle in that sense. Guru is like the electricity, you know. As long as electricity is flowing, then the switch is acting like a guru. When the electricity stops, the switch stops acting as a guru. So, in that sense, it refers to both the person and the principle. Because the person embodies the principle. Our philosophy is not abstract, that now we got an abstract guru, then we will never surrender to anybody. Or, you know, the Ritviks say, well, Prabhupada is the guru. Okay, so 300 years later, Prabhupada becomes a distant memory for them, a principle, almost like impersonalism. You know, because, you know, there will be just words quoted from Prabhupada, and, you know, so many years later, the culture will have changed, and then even today, we have a tough time processing some of what Prabhupada said and how to apply it in our culture today. We need living Vaishnavas to continue the tradition. But then the question is, well, is the living Vaishnav a walking saint? Is he, you know, Prabhupada's carbon copy? Or is he Vishwanath Chakravarti's carbon? No, he's not. Every guru has an individual quality, individual personality, and that's fine. But the person has to be connecting us to the parampara. Prabhupada made this point, which was beautiful when he started out. When I heard this, that passing the message like a postman. If you look at the guru as a postman, then expectations are not so high of the individual, but expectations are high of the message. And so, yeah, when the gurus fell down, the disciples, if they reflected on this, that no, it's not the philosophy that's at fault. And after all, we have so many examples of fall down. Why is it surprising? Brahma, you know, lusting after his daughter. Saugari Muni, looking at the fish. Muni, you know, his great sage. Akruta and Krishna's pastime, participating in a murder. So, it is not unexpected. But human beings are, we are human beings, you know, we have. But the credit should be, if the person tried to follow Prabhupada with determination, that effort is what matters. After all, we are all beggars, you know, we are begging Krishna to recognize our efforts, however insincere our efforts are. Then now to suddenly expect that one of us is going to be superhuman is unreasonable, you know. But the philosophy is superhuman. The philosophy is coming from the Supreme. And as long as we are connected with the Supreme, we are superhuman. It is superhuman to control the mind and the senses. It is not feasible otherwise. It is superhuman to not, for a householder to not engage in a physical relationship, as is said here, with his wife. It is superhuman. It's not human. But how is it coming about? It's because of the mercy of the spiritual master and the whole philosophy that flows out of it. Sridhadi Muni Prabhu probably wants to challenge all this, but Sridhadi Muni is a Vasu? Is that the... Oh, Bhishma. Oh, Bhishma is a Vasu?
Yeah, perfect. After he died, then he would become back a Vasu, which is like a demigod position.
Well, I probably missed about half of all this conversation here, but
I don't blame you, you know, I have a monotonic.
But you said, you know, like Prabhupada's here now, 300 years from now he's going to be, you know, more of a, like we talk about, I don't know, somebody from 1200, yeah, you know,
like, Jiva Goswami.
We read a few paragraphs about and go hallelujah, for, you know. but then there'll be a living guru, and the living guru represents the tradition.
That's right.
So we're talking about who's a guru, who's an art guru. Well, if the guru is representing a tradition of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, then he's a guru in the tradition of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Now, if he's not representing the tradition of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, he can still think he's a guru, but he ain't a guru of Gaudiya Vaishnavism.
Well, I guess her question was, sometimes we don't recognize that they're not representatives. They claim to be, and it appears externally that they are, and then there's a problem. That was her issue. Okay, so let's close here. Thank you very much. Oh, there's one more question. Sorry, Mataji.
You were mentioning that the man, in all the scripture, mentioned that men should like give up everything and surrender. You know, what about the woman? You know,
yeah, what about the woman?
Yeah, should they give up everything also, all the kids and everything else, and they surrender to Krishna fully?
You put me on the spot here. There is a risk involved in giving Bhagavatam classes. Because I don't have all the answers, but I'll try to answer this one because I've thought about it and I've heard many different types of answers from different devotees and I've not been convinced with them. So I have developed my own kind of framework to approach this. So, yeah, the question is, should the person is asked to give up the wife, family and etc. I don't remember what else was there. So, nation. There are two aspects to the wife. Similarly, there are two aspects to the husband. I'll call it a spouse. There are two aspects to the spouse. There is a material body, a material aspect, and then there is a spiritual aspect. The recommendations here are simply saying, balance the material and spiritual. Don't sacrifice the spiritual for the material. Okay. And so we only hear that part. Don't sacrifice the spiritual for the material. That means the wife, the spouse has a body that is attractive. Hormones are running. You know, biology is in action. We are under the constraints of biology. So, the body materially is attractive. That can cause us to lose sight of the fact that inside the body is a soul. And therefore just cause us to exploit the person. Whereas, if we reject the material completely, that's unrealistic. And just think, oh, my spouse is just the spirit soul. It doesn't work because we are embodied spirit souls. So the approach that the acharyas teach us, and the Bhagavatam in many places seems to be a rejection of just the fact that there is a material body, and the solution seems to be, well, just give it up, leave home. But the Vaishnava acharyas point out that the higher solution, that's a jnani perspective, the higher solution is to engage the bodies of your spouses in Krishna service and recognize that sometimes, you know, there will be some bodily attraction because that's biology in action. It's like aharavaya nidra maithunam. These are four necessities of the body. Now, when the instructions are given, well, give up all of this and leave, that's referring to the four stages of life. There's 25 years of brahmacharya. Now we're talking about men for now. There's 25 years of grahastha. Then there is vanaprastha, where the spouses are still together, and then there is sannyas. So a lot of these instructions are for the fourth stage, sannyas. Okay? They're not calibrated for all stages. It is meaningless to ask the brahmachari to give up the wife. He's not even married yet. So how can this apply to the brahmachari? It cannot, right? Similarly, it cannot apply to the unmarried woman. Nobody's married yet. You can't give anything up. A lot of these instructions are in the stage of sannyas. Exhorting the person to now stop and dedicate oneself completely to the service of the Lord. Now, why aren't there any instructions for women? Because if you ask me to provide the verse that gives an instruction for women to take sannyas, I won't be able to give you. There isn't one, unfortunately. But is Devahuti taking sannyas? No, examples of women, but are they taking sannyas? Okay, so my point is that, I'm not saying there aren't examples of women in the Bhagavatam, that's not my point. So I'm finishing up, a little close. So now what should the woman do? Well, in Prabhupada's words, the Vaishnavi should remain in the protection of the son. That's how Prabhupada explains it. So this is a cultural question now. You know, what should a woman do? Should she take sannyas? Or, you know, the men are leaving home. Should the women leave home? And Prabhupada doesn't say that she should. He says she should remain under the protection of her father when she's unmarried, of the husband when she's married, and when the husband is left, of the children. That's Prabhupada's recommendation. And I don't really have anything to add to that. I don't know if that answers the question, but you know, this is how it is. But in all these stages, women are Vaishnavis. They are souls. And so they're chanting and they're pure devotees. And so what? If the person can be at home comfortably and chant Hare Krishna, go back to Godhead, versus the person who has to take sannyas and go out, preach all over the world, well, you know, what's more convenient? The goal is to go back to Godhead. So either way, chanting Hare Krishna, whatever, for the two different genders. Anyway, Prabhupada has a distinction for the two different genders from what I have read in his different purports. And this is a cultural question. But it's a complicated topic in today's ISKCON, and I don't have all the answers, and I haven't studied it in depth, and I can't speak for the ladies. So maybe there's somebody else who wants to chime in.
In addition to what you were saying, there's also Prabhupada's instruction that for the ladies, they can just stay together and protect each other in situation with, you know. But again, same thing, whether the man is traveling or the women are traveling, but they are protected in whatever situation. But then we have examples. We have Janava Mata, who continued her preaching after Lord Nityananda left. So, you know, we see from examples what our Vaishnavis have done in such situation.
Yeah. I was reading this article on Dandavats. Yamuna Mataji was writing, and she said that Prabhupada asked her to stay together with the Dinatarani Mataji and do bhajan. Yeah. But we have these snippets of Prabhupada's, but the thing is how to apply all these things in today's society. You know, our devotees are drawn from society, and these questions are natural. I was thinking, you know, Shukadeva Goswami, when he's giving Bhagavatam, he's speaking the Bhagavatam, there aren't any women in the audience. It is not in the description. When Sutta Goswami is speaking in Naimisharanya, there aren't any women in the audience. When Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, there are no women in the audience. Yeah. So, there are examples of individual women being spoken to. But, I mean, this is just the fact. So, why, you know, how do we take Vaishnava culture and continue it so that it doesn't become a decadent, not decadent is the wrong word, but an inapplicable philosophy? You know, where we kind of live our lives separately, and then we go to the temple for spirituality whenever we can, and listen to all these things without understanding, without being able to process them or how to apply them in our lives. But this is our challenge for the future going forward. Because society has changed dramatically since Sutta Goswami was speaking. We are trying to apply what he spoke in today's cultural context. There are no simple answers. And I don't think that anybody really has one answer. Well, this is how it should be. It's broad spectrum of answers. Whatever keeps us in devotional service, I think. Okay, I think we should stop here. Thank you very much. Oh, Vimashima? Okay. Hare Krishna.